the GM on ESPN 102.5. The Game, online at thegamenashville.com, live from Village Pub in East Nashville, where the Preds tonight take on Toronto at Toronto. They're not playing here at Village Pub, although it would be cool if they hosted a game here. But
yeah,
the Preds are playing in Toronto tonight, but we have the watch party here out at Village Pub in East Nashville. If you live in East Nashville, come on by and register to win those premium center ice lower level tickets for the Preds against Calgary next week. Your opportunity drawing at 7 o'clock. You can come in and win those tickets. Floyd, Matt LaFleur, the new offensive coordinator of the Titans, met with the media today. And I think that of all the coaches, Mike Vrabel's the most important coach, obviously.
Right.
LaFleur may be the second most important because he's the offensive play caller and he's the offensive coordinator with a defensive coach.
Right.
And so what he's thinking, I mean, those kind of things, the LaFleur is good. If the offense isn't very good, fans are going to blame Matt LaFleur. And this is his first opportunity coaching, or really as a coordinator who calls the plays. And so he met with the media today. We'll get a couple of cuts on what he said, and then we'll kind of react to it. So we start off with his relationship with Mike Vrabel. This was what Matt LaFleur said today about that.
You know, I just think from our personalities clicked, and I think from a leadership standpoint, you know, the organization hired the right guy, no doubt about it.
So he thinks the organization hires the right guy in Mike Vrabel. Then it gets turned to the offense. He's got three things for a quarterback. And this is in reference to Marcus. This is Matt LaFleur, the new offensive coordinator of the Titans, his three things in a quarterback.
There's really three, I call them prerequisites to playing the position. Is number one, you got to be a natural thrower. You better be fearless in the pocket, be able to stand in there. And then the last one is just those intangibles. And I think he possesses all of those. And so some of the things that we'll work on with him is just, and you never know what a guy's been taught in the past, but we're going to be extremely detailed with his fundamentals and his footwork, and just because I think that leads to more consistent quarterback play.
What do you think of that?
I mean, I would agree, and I think that's one of the things they're going to have to do. Hopefully, Marcus, I mean, if I was Marcus, let me put it that way, I would be headed to Southern California, and I would be, you know, finding house or one of those quarterback gurus to go ahead and spend a month with him, or, you know, however long I thought it was going to take. And then anything you can get from coach, that's a plus. But I agree with, I mean, we've talked about it before, and, you know, Marcus really missed last off season, and it really affected his fundamentals. He got really sloppy. And you know, I mean, they didn't do a good job of bringing him back and getting him fundamentally sound before they, you know, by the time you get back and you've missed as much as he's missed, you want to get right into plays and, you know, all, instead of taking care of the basics. So he'll have an entire offseason to do that, and I'm sure they'll take care of it.
What did you think about his three things for a quarterback? The being fearless, the standing in there in the pocket, the intangibles. And I forget what the other one was, but his little three things that he had. The ability to throw the ball. I mean, I think some of those are really standard.
I would hope. I mean, you got to be fearless. You got to throw the ball, right?
I mean, I'm listening to those things. I'm like, Zach Mettenberger, some of those things. Like, I don't want to get too carried away about that. Meanwhile, he was asked about Marcus and Marcus running and what he thinks about Mariota as a runner outside of the pocket. This was Matt LaFleur today on that.
The first thing that we're always going to be very conscious of is how we can protect the quarterback. That is the foundation. That's everything's going to start with that in mind. So, and then, you know, when you do get out of the pocket, because stuff happens, whether it's designed or whether it goes off schedule, he's got to do a good job of being smart, and he's such a competitor, and you can see it on the tape as we're going through where he's fighting for some extra yards, where I'd rather him preserve himself and get down.
Matt LaFleur saying what every fan in section 217 says when Marcus runs with the ball: get out of bounds,
get down,
get out of bounds. I mean, my thing about Marcus getting hurt running the ball, it's not so much him getting hit that I'm worried about as much as it is him pulling a hamstring or him tearing a
sliding
ligament or him,
yeah,
yeah, it's one of those things.
Crazy. But I thought that was good. I like the protection part. You know, it sounds like they're going to be very, very locked into protections. Who's going to protect? How are they going to protect? And that will be really, really important. And as soon as they can do that, Marcus will gain just so much confidence. You know, feel so much better about what's going on.
I just feel like when Marcus, in terms of him running, I feel like he's not really natural about when it comes to when to run and when not to run and how much to run and when to throw it away and when not to throw it away. And, like, all of those things, I feel like he's thinking about them. Like, when Josh Dobbs used to play quarterback at UT, and it was like, you know, you could see him, like, clicking in his mind, like, click one, click two, click. I feel like with Marcus, he doesn't know when the pocket's collapsing, when to take it out and go. And I thought he looked better at the end of the season and in the playoffs about when to run. But I just never felt like it was natural for him on when to run.
Well, I mean, the truth is, I didn't think he was very comfortable in the pocket at all. And I think part of it was protection. But more than that, it was his insecurity about the receivers. And because of that, I think he knew the timing of everything was off. You know, most of the time, you ask the old veteran quarterbacks have done it, and they know, okay, five steps, plant, boom, boom, buzz, go. You know, and I think he lost all of that, and I think he'd be dropping back and he'd be looking, and is he gonna make the cut? Will he make it the right spot? Should I go ahead and throw it? Well, by that time, you know you're off schedule, and now you're just trying to survive.
You know, Tom House was in the Brady Tom versus Time, the little mini series on Facebook. And they showed Brady out there with Tom House, and it was Brady, Brady's trainer, Tom House, and Edelman. And so Edelman would run the route, Brady would throw it, and then House would go over the fundamental of the throwing it with Brady. And the reason I bring that up is because Tom House had a line in that of saying, you know, quarterbacks at Tom's level don't come here to get 5% better, they come here to get 1% better.
Right.
I think in Marcus's case, he needs to get 5% better. He needs to get 10% better.
Oh, yeah.
It's not about getting 1% better. It's not about tweaking a little thing with Marcus. It's about tweaking some big things and some bad habits with Marcus. Well,
but I think you're right. But I think you start off saying, okay, we're going to fix 20% of it, or we're going to fix 15 or 10 or whatever the percentage is. Next year, we're going to fix 12. Year after that, we fix 6. Then, like you said, you know, we get down to where it is 1% in Tom's category. But right now, I agree with you. I think there's a lot to fix.
Finally, Matt LaFleur was asked about Marcus's character. And, again, I'm not sure I've heard anybody say anything bad about Marcus, but this was Matt LaFleur talking about Marcus's character today.
Well, first, you get a chance to kind of get to know these guys when they're coming out in the draft process. And he's as stand-up. I haven't been more impressed with many other quarterbacks coming out in terms of his character, and you can tell that he's as coachable as they come. So I think that really stood out to me. But we're still kind of going through and trying to evaluate what exactly each one of these guys does well, and we're going to try to tailor our offense to our players' abilities.
And I think that right there is what the fans want to hear.
Oh, it's what I want to hear, that's for sure. I mean, I hope he holds himself to that, because he will find, I don't know how often he's had to do this. Couldn't have been very often. He's not very old. But it is difficult. And what you will find is that, okay, here are 25 plays that are really, really set up for Marcus and for Davis and for Matthews and for whoever else, you know, all these guys. I feel really, really good about that. And that's what we'll start the playbook with. But then you get into games, and all of a sudden in the games, in game planning, you're saying, geez, this play really, really worked for Indy. You know, they gained a ton. We got to put that in. Well, you know, the receiver can't run that route. Well, it doesn't matter. I mean, we'll just do it slop because it was such a big play, and then I think you start getting off track. And that's why you really, really have to be careful to say, hey, if it does not fit our players, we cannot do it. Forget it. And eliminate right there. And if you do that, then I think you'll continue to bring in plays that may not be as good as some of the others, but will be good because that's what your players will be good at.
You mean like Mike Mularkey trying to run a play on fourth down for a Dory Jackson that worked for Tyreek Hill?
That's hard.
That play at Arizona will go down as an all-timer. And by all-timer, I mean all-time stupid. That Arizona game, in my mind, is what cost Mike Mularkey his job. Because they coached that game so just, ugh.
That wasn't very pretty.
Fake punt with Weems and just driving me insane. Weems, who, by the way, according to this SpotTrack.com, is not a free agent next year, which I have a problem with. They need to get rid of him. But that's neither here nor there. Speaking of guys they need to get rid of, maybe guys they need to add, now that we've heard from Matt LaFleur, how much work does he on the coaching side and John Robinson on the player side, how much work do they need to do on this offense? Because this offense was a mess last season.
Yeah.
We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Your thoughts on the Titans offense, your thoughts on Matt LaFleur as we're starting off this hour with that. We're live out at Village Pub in East Nashville. And for business owners, I want to tell you about my friends at Authentically American. Are you proud of what you wear? Probably looking at your clothes like, what do you mean? I mean, I guess I but are you proud? If you want to be proud of what you wear, talk to my friends at Authentically American. Authentically American is a veteran-owned company passionate about creating U.S. jobs and making the best branded apparel out there. If you're that business owner, you want that high-quality product made here in the USA, and your employees will be proud to wear it, why not outfit them with Authentically American? High quality, and I cannot stress high quality enough. It is made in the USA quality. High quality polos, hats, jackets, oxfords, socks, vests, and more. Made in the USA. Whether you've got five employees or that Fortune 500 company, Authentically American has you covered with low to no minimums. So that small business owner you can support made in the USA. Authentically American donates 10% of all sales to veteran charities and our American heroes. And I want to emphasize top line sales, which means there are zero, no accounting games at Authentically American. Authentically American is so American that their website is authenticallyamerican.us. That's right, .us, because it just makes sense. Check them out today. If you want to be proud of where your apparel is made, the choice is simple. It's Authentically American, authenticallyamerican.us. Contact Authentically American for that made in the USA need today, authenticallyamerican.us. Jared and the GM, live from Village Pub in East Nashville, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I think it's all predicated on each game. You know, some games, teams are going to sell out and try to stop the run. And so you might have those actions to try to draw them up to create the explosives off of that. But I think on first and second down in normal situations, you want to be 50-50 if at all possible. And it kind of gets skewed based on what you're doing on third down or, you know, in the red zone, situational ball. If you're in two-minute mode, that's where it kind of gets a little bit out of whack. But if we can stay balanced in first and second down or in those normal situations, I think we'll be okay.
Titans offensive coordinator Matt LaFleur there about the running game. We kind of talked about Marcus a little bit, but the offense as a whole, Floyd, I think everybody would agree, really disappointing last season. And now you look at it going forward, and the one thing that I can say about this offensive group is it's a mess. I mean, I like the two tackles, although Conklin's got a torn ACL, so we don't know when he's going to be back into the fold. I like Derrick Henry, but as much as I love to let the big dog eat, there's a lot of times where he loses 3 yards on a carry when you can't lose 3 yards on a carry, and that's got to stop. And the receivers, I mean, just like the rest of the offense, it feels at times like they're a total mess. Now, they'll get Tajae Sharpe back. The free agents on the offensive side of the ball for John Robinson, the starters, Josh Klein, the guard, is a free agent. He made $1.65 million last year, according to SpotTrack.com. And Eric Decker, the other starter on offense, who is a free agent, making $4 million last season. Before we get to whether or not – oh, excuse me. Harry Douglas is also a free agent, so they may have to be without him as well. Yeah. So let's go ahead and take Klein off and take Decker off. Now you've got Matthews, Davis, Taylor, Sharp at wide receiver, although we don't know about Matthews. We don't know about Murray. We think Henry obviously is going to be a part of it. How much work does Matt LaFleur and John Robinson, both from a coaching guys up standpoint and from a roster standpoint, how much work do they have to do on this offense?
Well, I mean, they've got a lot of work to do. You try to soap it a little bit, and the truth is they've got a lot of work to do. And part of it is the new coach, because what's going to happen is he's going to come in, John's going to say, okay, come up to my office, let's sit down, and John is going to go through and say, okay, what does your Z receiver look like? What are his responsibilities? How smart does he have to be? How big does he have to be? How fast does he have to be? On and on and on. And then you're going to go, okay, now tell me about X. Now tell me about a slot. Now tell me about a tight end. And they'll have to go through every position on the offense just like that. And I think because of that, there are going to be some guys that just won't fit. You know, if he comes to – you know, I can't think of a good example.
Henry, to me, would be the biggest worry, because you think about what Todd Gurley did in that offense.
Yeah, I mean,
in L.A., and he's not Todd Gurley.
He's not Todd Gurley. And of course, Todd Gurley would be probably the number one person to fit in most offenses for a lot of offenses, for a lot of coaches. But, I mean, Derek is really good at what he does, but he is not, you know, an outside runner. He is not a, you know, receiver. He is not necessarily a pass protector. He is not some of the things that, you know, you're going to have from the running back. He's really got a lot of work to do. Now, he's smart, dedicated. He's going to work his butt off, and he'll do everything he can to get it done. But it is hard. But they're going to have to go through, and they'll analyze every position that way. And like I said, they're going to get to – I can't think of a good guard, center. Let's say, you know, Jones. They get to Jones, and he's going to say, I need a bigger center because, you know, the Rams brought in a center. I need a smarter, a bigger, able to pull, whatever it may be, whatever. And they're going to look at Jones and say, he doesn't quite fit that, you know. Then it's a question of, okay, do you adjust the offense to eliminate that part of his – of his negatives, of, you know, the things he can't do, and as you said, form the offense to the people that are there. But it's a real compromise. It's a give and take between exactly what the quarterback wants, or the coach wants, and what they have. And it's just like we're saying, running back. If he says, I need Todd Gurley as a running back, you say, well, we don't have Todd Gurley, but this is what we do have, is, you know, can you make that work? And if he says, yeah, then, you know, you're okay, you're fine. If he goes, no, that won't work, then automatically you're in the market for a running back now.
But didn't Matt LaFleur just say, and we just played it in the last segment, about how it's about the players, about how everything they're doing is about the players they have?
Exactly.
The one thing I worry about is maybe there's something that's a good fit for Marcus that's not a good fit for Derek, and then you have to pick between the two, kind of. I mean, the truth is, like, this can be hard for some of these guys to fit what they're trying to do, even when they say it's about the players and not the plays. You have to come up with the plays for the players.
Well, and there are going to be positions that are more important than others. You know, there are going to be, you know, again, your strong side receiver. You say, okay, this is what I need at this position. I need a guy that runs a 4-4. I have got to have a 4-4 there. Well, we don't have that. You know, so – you know, if that's the number one element in the number one position in the passing game to make the passing game work, then John's got to go out and get a 4-4 receiver, you know, because the offense is just not going to work with a 4-7-5 receiver. And I think you'll go through all positions like that. There'll be some of the positions where he'll say, hey, I need a 4-4 receiver. And they say, well, we don't have a 4-4, but we do have a 4-5. He goes, oh, that'd be cool. That'd be fine. All right, let's move on.
Well, like, I also think, too, from roster construction, they're going to need, I think, another running back to go with Henry. They're going to need probably two new guards, unless you're comfortable with Spain starting next season at the guard position, which I don't think you are.
I wouldn't. I mean, I need another guard.
So two guards, because Klein's a free agent. I doubt you re-sign Klein. So two guards, a running back, and how many receivers?
I think it's going to depend on how many he can live with. You know, how many of those guys will fit what he's doing. Because let's face it, other than, I'm just guessing this now, you know, other than the two rookies, I mean, how many of those guys would you fight for?
Like, you wouldn't fight for Decker.
Yeah. I mean, you know, would you fight and say, oh, no, you know, that guy's got to be on the Harry Douglas syndrome. You know, we've got to have him. He's got to be there.
Douglas.
He is this, that, or the other. And so how many of those guys would you fight for? And I'm not sure. You know, the rookies, J-Rob would fight for the rookies. I mean, the rookies are going to be here. And they're going to have to make them better. But how many of those other guys fit? And, you know, that's the big question.
Would you give Sharp another shot?
I mean, I would.
So you got the rookies and Sharp. I mean, I think they've got to cut Matthews. I go back to the fact that Matthews acts too much like a diva receiver and doesn't play enough like a diva receiver. Like, Matthews goes and wants to do all the talking and wants to get on his political soapbox, but then he has four catches for 37 yards, and that's not good enough for me.
Well, see, and if you look at that offense, you think back of that offense and you say, okay, who was it that played for them that really played well? Well, the two starters, you know, you had the Buffalo kid, Watkins, and
Robert Woods, who was also from Buffalo.
Also from Buffalo. Neither one, you know, a 6'5", 230-pound guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're both a little bit smaller, a little bit faster, a little bit quicker guys. And then you say, okay, now Kupp comes in, and Kupp, you know, generally came in as like the third. And he was a little bit more Decker-like, if you will. You know, a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, maybe not the blazing speed, and he kind of fit that role. But I'm not sure that we have the guys to fit, you know, the Woods/Watkins role.
Well, yeah, I think the guy that fits the Cooper Kupp role, and people are going to chuck their radios out the window when I say this, I think Corey Davis is probably your closest player to Cooper Kupp in terms of size and speed, and because I don't think that, I mean, I don't think Davis is a burner at all.
And we have nothing to base that on other than you just haven't seen him run fast.
Right.
You know, I mean, you say, I've watched him all year long. I've watched every catch he made, and I just don't see him separate. I don't see him, you know, get past people, run past people. Now, he can jump up and he can get the basketball type receptions, but the L.A., and I'm just looking at the Rams receivers, that was Kupp. You know, the Rams receivers, it was throw the ball down the field, they're going to run and get it kind of stuff. And we just don't do a good job of that.
615-737-1025 is the phone number, live here out at Village Pub in East Nashville. Floyd, you scared me.
With?
You got me worried. There's one thing with the Preds that I'm kind of worried about.
Uh-oh.
Thanks in large part to you.
My fault?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'll get to that coming up next. We're live out here at Village Pub in East Nashville for the Preds Watch Party tonight. Come on out here as they take on Toronto at 6:30 and register to win those lower-level premium center ice tickets for the Preds against Calgary. The drawing will be at 7 o'clock tonight. So if you live out in East Nashville, come on out to Village Pub, where, of course, they got their pretzel special rolling for the game tonight. Get excited. So come on out to the Village Pub out here in East Nashville for the game, Preds and Toronto tonight, and win those tickets next week on Thursday against Calgary. Lower level premium center ice, as I call them, the Floyd Reese seats, which I know you don't like that I do that, but I do it anyways. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
I think the team was surprised. It was, you know, Phil's been a clean player his whole career and one of the top players in the league, and no history at any of this, so yeah, we're all a little bit surprised. You know, we got to move on, and we'll miss Phil while he's out of the lineup, but it gives an opportunity for others to step up.
Peter Laviolette the other day on Fox Sports Tennessee talking about the suspension to Philip Forsberg, and the Preds went and won the first game that they were without Forsberg. They play tonight at Toronto. So this is the one thing that you've kind of got me thinking about that I'm a little worried about. So when you think of Toronto in the NHL, you think of Austin Matthews, who is, you know, the, you know, a budding superstar, along with Connor McDavid, along with some of these other guys, and you know exactly where I'm going, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
You've got me worried. The Preds lose a guy like Philip Forsberg, and it's like, nah, no big deal, that'd be all right. They got all these other great players, they're deep, they've got an entire roster full of guys capable of taking care of business. But then you go to the playoffs. And last year, you had the team that didn't have a ton of superstars, but had a bunch of guys. And you know what? Top to bottom, clearly best team in the league. But then you ran into Crosby and Malkin. And those guys are superstars. And Phil Kessel's a superstar. And you don't really have any superstars. PK is a celebrity superstar type player in terms of how much he's loved around the league, but does PK play like one of the top superstar players in the league? At times, yes. At other times, no. Roman Josi is a great player. Is Roman Josi a superstar player? I'm not ready to go that far. Offensively, do they have any superstars? They got a lot of good players, but they lack that transcendent star. So I ask you this, Floyd Reese. Is that on some level, does that make you nervous when you think about this team in the playoffs, that their lack of a pure superstar may be the one thing that holds them back?
Yeah, I'm not sure it makes me nervous because the team as a whole is so good. I think this is what happens when you look at a team sport. For you, when you play well as a team, you have to do just that. You have to play well as a team, which means everybody has to play to a certain standard, which means if you have somebody along the line that is a key part of the program not play very good, it affects everybody. On the other side of the coin, if you've got a superstar or two, there can be a few people on the rest of the team that don't play well, but he can still go out and score two goals. Or he can still go out and pick up 3 or 4 points. Or he can still do some of the things that will take the heat off of the rest of those other guys.
Case in point, the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You have one great team of really good players top to bottom. You have one superstar that literally keeps his team in the game.
And if you saw a great example of how the good team can win, just like Philly did. You know, everybody played good and they won and that was great. But you, the other side of it, I mean, Tom played as well as he can play, but there were just too many of those guys. You know, now, if any one of those other guys, if you know, the kid hadn't gotten hurt, hadn't gotten dinged and was able to play, well, then maybe it changes all that. But I think what the great players do is it gives you a chance to win when things aren't going well. And it's not necessarily – you know, in football, you know, a great left tackle is really, really important. But if you have to make a choice, give me a great quarterback or give me a great running back or give me somebody that scores points because they can, you know, if you have the – if you're Houston with their receiving corps, I mean, you can just back up and throw the ball down the field and those guys will run past somebody to get it.
Mm-hmm.
And even though your offensive line may be good, your running game is shut down, you haven't gained a yard – because you can back up and throw it down the field as far as you can, and those guys run there, you still have a chance to win.
Well, remember in the St. Louis series, the one thing we were worried about the entire time was Tarasenko going off.
Yeah.
We're like, if Tarasenko goes off, scores 3 goals in a game, you lose.
Yeah.
Other than that, you're better than them. You got better goaltending, better defense, really, you know, better four lines. But if Tarasenko, who's a huge superstar, if he goes off, you might lose. And I think that's what it's going to be like. If you get into the playoffs, right now the Predators would play St. Louis in the first round of the playoffs if it started today. St. Louis has Tarasenko, a superstar.
Right.
You would then get Winnipeg, theoretically, or Dallas in the second round. Dallas has Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, two superstars. Winnipeg has Patrick Laine, who is going to be an absolute superstar. So, again, the superstars are the guys that can beat you in these things, whereas you clearly have a better team than everybody else. The one thing that I think I go back to last year was the Chicago series, because Chicago had the superstars, and you beat them in 4 straight. And it was Johansson who, I think, weren't we kind of shocked at how he really dominated that entire series?
Yeah, with those superstars.
And it was like, hey,
oh yeah,
Johansson raises his level of play when it comes to the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And Johansson didn't play in the cup final against Crosby and Malkin and those guys. So maybe he is kind of like a secret superstar.
Maybe. And I don't, you know, I think that's a great example, though. I mean, the team played so well, you know, Pekka played so well that they were able to, you know, hold it together and they could eliminate all those good star superstar players. And I think that's easily possible. I think in the sport of football, it may be easier for a team like that to win simply because they only have to do it once. You know, in all these other, you've got to go out and do it four times.
You got to be the better team
four times in a row and not have one of those other guys, one of those stars go off on you, you know.
Well, and think about how incredible it would be. Now, this would be the opposite last year, but how incredible it would be if the Preds get home ice throughout the Western Conference playoffs, and the difference in football and hockey being that football, every game then you play is at home. Whereas on hockey, you still have to go on the road, even though. So if you're a team, you just think, if you're a road team in a series, if I steal one there, then I'm good. The Preds against St. Louis won game one at St. Louis. They lost the other two in St. Louis, but they won every home game, so they were good. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the rub here. As a GM, though, and I guess, you know, football's your sport, but I think it probably equates to the same in hockey. Would you rather have an incredible team top to bottom or a team that's a decent team but has a couple of huge game-changing superstars?
Wow. I mean, I've always been one to believe that, and you've heard me say this before, in football you can have 21 people in place, but if you don't have the quarterback, you can't win at all. If you have 15 or 16 in place and you've got the best quarterback in the league, you can win it all. So I guess I would be one of those guys that would want a good team, not necessarily a great team, but give me the absolute best quarterback, and I'll win my share.
See, I think you're right about that for the most part. I mean, if you go back to, you know, look at the last two Cup champions, Pittsburgh with Crosby and Malkin, the Cup champion before that, Chicago, with Taves, Kane, and Keith. You know, the teams that usually win the Cup are the teams that usually have the superstars. I mean, I think if you were to play Tampa, right, like when Tampa came in here a couple weeks ago, Tampa, I don't think top to bottom is a better team than the Preds, but they have Stamkos, and they have Hedman, and they have Kucherov, and so they've got the superstars, and you've got really good players, but not the superstars, and in the end, you lost because Steven Stamkos drilled one in with 30 seconds or a minute to go or whatever it was, and you lose in overtime because, again, they have Steven Stamkos.
And he's, you know, I mean, in spite of what anybody, if you're in a shootout, in spite of what everybody else does, when it's his turn,
he's going to put it in.
He's probably going to put it in. You're probably going to lose.
Meanwhile, though, the other teams that you might play in the playoffs on the other side of the bracket, if they were to start today, San Jose obviously has a huge superstar in Brent Burns, but their team is just like, you know, it's just not the same San Jose that you played 2 years ago. That San Jose team 2 years ago had some teeth.
Right.
This team, not as much. Calgary, not really, you know, humongous superstar, not so much. Vegas is more like you. They've got a great team.
Vegas is like you.
But they don't have any superstars. Yeah. And then Minnesota, who has Boudreaux as coach, so they'll never get to you anyways. But speaking of,
they'll never get a chance.
Not Minnesota. Not with Boudreaux as coach. That guy is like Dusty Baker, Marty Schottenheimer. You know, these coaches that whenever they get in the playoffs, it's just too big for them.
Win 14 games, can't win a playoff game.
Boudreaux. Andy Reid is starting to get into that category.
Closing in.
Andy better watch it because Andy is getting into the Boudreaux category. But I'm not worried about Minnesota because of Boudreaux. Just something to think about. You got a great team. I think you have the best team top to bottom in the NHL. But you don't have the best superstars. And I wonder if that would be a great equalizer in a playoff series.
Yeah.
Hal Gill will join us next. We'll get his thoughts on that, his thoughts on the comeback the other night over New York, his thoughts on Toronto tonight. That is all coming up. We are live out at Village Pub in East Nashville, where once again we are giving away a pair of lower-level premium center ice tickets to the Preds game next Thursday night, February 15th. Against Calgary. That's a great Valentine's Day present, I just realized. Invite the sweetheart to the lower level premium center ice, and you can register to win them by coming out here to Village Pub in East Nashville. Register to win by 7 o'clock tonight. Hal Gill's next. It's Jared and the GM right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5, the game is your flagship station for the Nashville Predators. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter and like us on Facebook to keep up with everything going on in Smashville. Twitter at 102.5 The Game. Instagram at The Game Nashville. Facebook.com/The Game Nashville. By the way, we have an announcement tomorrow, a big programming announcement, 7 o'clock tomorrow morning here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I have been asked by several people if that big announcement is that I'm fired, and I am here to answer that I hope it's not. But I have not been told that.
Yes, we don't have any verification.
By anyone or not. And if and as we know, Mr. Patriot Circle of Trust over here, Floyd Reese, even if they told him, hey, you're getting a new partner, we're announcing it at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, we know he wouldn't let that cat out of the bag. So something we were kicking around. The Preds, I think, top to bottom, best team in the league in terms of, I mean, their third defensive pair has a guy in Alexi Imelin that's making like $4 million on it.
Right.
Their fourth line is going to have in the playoffs probably Mike Fisher and Colton Sissons on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they just got studs on studs on studs. But they don't have that great transcendent superstar. Like Edmonton has it in Connor McDavid. They can't get out of their own way. And you just, if you worry a little bit when you get into the playoffs that a team with the superstars might beat you even though they have a lesser team because of that superstar. And Hal Gill joins us now, Predators radio analyst, will be on the call tonight. Hal, what do you make of that kind of argument that we were just kicking back a little bit about? If there's one pitfall we worry about, it's that maybe the Preds run into a team with a superstar on fire.
Well, I guess you have a good point, but I'll counter that with who are they going to play against? Who are they going to beat up on? Because right now I think the Preds have three good sets of D and four great lines. I really think their fourth line for the Preds is one of the better lines out there. They're consistently playing in a defensive role and doing it well. So I think they're built to withstand a skilled player. I think they have the guys to do it. And not only do they have the guys to play against them defensively, but I think the defensive players like PK Subban and Matthias Ekholm can counter and go back at them. So sometimes that puts the offense on their heels.
And it's funny because we were just kicking it back and forth about last year, how when they played the team with the superstars in Chicago, it didn't matter. They swept them four straight. And then when they played the team with the superstars in Pittsburgh, it was the superstars who really gave the Preds a bunch of headaches, and Crosby and Malkin and so on and so forth. But the big difference between those two series, Ryan Johansson didn't play. Are we maybe underrating some of the high-end guys on this roster when we talk about other team superstars?
Well, I mean, that's the NHL. You know, you talk about Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. You know, they're the best players in the world. So it's tough to say, hey, we're just going to shut them right down. It's not that easy, And I think maybe everyone's looking at it, if we can shut down Chicago, then, hey, we can shut down anyone, you know, but it's not always that easy. But I will say I've been impressed with Ryan Johansson the last few days. He's shown and proven that he is he's that $8 million guy. He's playing some great hockey, physical and strong. He's such a big body. He's been really good. And you have other guys that are kind of filling into that sniper role. Kevin Fiala has played great hockey. And, you know, there's some guys, you know, we always talk about Arvidsson and Forsberg. But there's other guys that are doing the job. And there's so many good role players that I think it complements the skill that they have.
Hal, when you get in a situation like they are these next couple where you're playing back-to-backs and it's on the road and you're all of those kinds of things. I mean, obviously you have to adjust what you're doing, you know, between today and tomorrow. But how much do those back-to-backs take it out of you maybe for the next game, you know, a day or two later?
That's a great point because, you can play the back-to-back and you feel all right. You wake up the next day and you're kaput, and it's hard to bounce back from that. Sometimes it's the third game in four nights that's the hardest. So that'll be in Montreal, and we'll find out. I think the way the lines are set up, Laviolette can roll through them, which keeps minutes under 20, and it's a lot easier to do that. If you're playing 28, 29 minutes on a back-to-back, then that becomes a lot, and that takes a lot out of you. But if you can roll through and get the D out there with 20 minutes, I think they'll be all right. And a big part goes back to the depth of the team that they can put out four lines. It makes it a lot easier, especially on the road.
Does the average hockey team travel with, you know, a masseuse or a muscle guy? Or, I mean, I know they have doctors, but they've got all of that kind of stuff, so you can go in and get a massage and you can do that kind of thing.
Yeah, these guys don't, you know, it's funny because we were talking about it. You get a per diem, you get money for every day that you're on road to go eat. And now it's becoming more, hey, we have food for you. The nutrition is so important. And then, you know, guys will sign up to go see, to get a massage after practice on an off day. It's treatment all the time in the hotel. Yeah, they're taking care of their bodies. They don't, it's not like the old days where you go out and have beer and chicken wings after practice. And these guys are.
But you miss those days, don't you?
I sure do. That's what I do now. I'm back in the old days.
Preds radio analyst Hal Gill's our guest here on Jared and the GM live out at Village Pub tonight. The Preds take on Toronto. Come on out to Village Pub in East Nashville to watch the game. Hal, what did you make of Monday night's game? I mean, I came away from that one and I thought that was a real character win from the Predators, because it could have been very easy at 4-2 to kind of pack it in and say, all right, well, head to Canada and take care of business there. But the team did not give up. They fought the whole third period, finally broke through, and then broke through again in overtime. What did you take away from Monday night's game?
I just thought the way they handled themselves, it was, you know, there's a lot of times you go down and you have some goals that went in and maybe you panic a little bit, try to get it back right away. They were patient. They took their time. They played a good, solid defensive game. I thought the Islanders played a pretty solid game down the stretch, and I was impressed that the Preds found a way to get that goal to equalize, and that overtime period was insane. It was awesome. Back and forth, you know, big saves, big shots. It was a lot of fun.
Hal Gill, our guest, will be on the broadcast tonight. Your thoughts on Toronto? I know the Preds don't see them very often, but a good, young, exciting team. What do you think of them tonight?
I'm excited to watch them because they're young, talented, fast. You know, they got some good players. Austin Matthews is a lot of fun to watch. He's a guy that can score at any time. He's got a deadly shot. Mitch Marner is an energy speed guy. He's going to be buzzing around out there. It's similar to the Islanders. It's a lot of offense. I think it's going to be a fun game.
He is Hal Gill. He'll be on the call tonight right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hal, appreciate it. We'll see you tonight.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Hal.
Yeah, Hal Gill, former Pred defenseman and current Preds radio analyst, joining us here on the show. Once again, tonight they take on Toronto, and you can come out and watch it. Village Pub in East Nashville, 6:30 puck drop. And, of course, the drawing for those premium center ice lower-level tickets, 7 o'clock tonight. So come on out. If you live out in East Nashville, you're looking about where you're going to go for dinner tonight, what kind of place is it going to be? This is the place to come. Village Pub out in East Nashville at 1308 McGavick Pike. Come on out and join us. Jared and the GM will be here, and then they kick it right into pregame for the game, which they'll have on all the TVs here. Coming up next, Floyd.
Yes, sir.
This Josh McDaniels thing. I got at least, I mean, everybody's blaming McDaniels today, and maybe they should, but is he the only one at fault? We'll get to that coming up next. It's Jared and the GM live at Village Pub in East Nashville on ESPN 102.5 The Game.